where warp meets weft. Where warp meets weft. This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30, Converging Weavers. This summer, Weavecast traveled to Florida to attend Convergence 2008. Convergence is a conference put on by the Handweavers Guild of America every 2 years. Weavers from all over the world come to attend this event. This was my very first Convergence, and it was, in a word, overwhelming. There was so much visual stimulation in terms of shows, exhibits, and amazing textiles, and the vendors' room was just staggering. I wish I'd had my microphone on when I first walked in, because I made this little noise that was kind of like, While I was at Convergence, and then afterwards Complex Weavers, I recorded over 6 hours of audio, and I spoke with 21 weavers. I interviewed teachers, new weavers, experienced weavers, loom manufacturers, a weaving couple who had restored a jacquard loom, and many, many others. It was a wonderful time, both personally and professionally. Some of that audio you'll hear today, and the rest I'll be filtering into the show over the rest of the year. I'd like to put a huge thank you out there to everyone who participated in the fundraising auction last fall. The proceeds of that auction paid for the airfare, hotel, and conference fees. I literally could not have made it there without you. The last scraps of that money paid for a new microphone, one that lets me record from a distance, and this made it so much easier to conduct on-the-fly interviews. I didn't have to walk up to somebody and put a microphone right in their face. I could just hold it casually down at my hip. And this extra distance put both them and me at our ease, and you'll hear that in the interviews. If you've ever wondered what I do with your Weavecast donations and sponsorship, I put them directly back into improving the show, upgrading the audio gear and software, paying the server fees, paying for travel, long-distance telephone charges, archive CDs for the guests who appear on the show. All of this stuff takes money, and I really appreciate your support. Together, we make Weavecast possible. Before we head off to Tampa, there's some weaving news I'd like to share. The first is something I've known about for a couple of months, but I've been sitting on it because I almost couldn't believe it was real. But the catalog just came out, and now it's official. I will be teaching weaving at the John C. Campbell Folk School in May 2009. I am so excited. I've been to the John C. Campbell Folk School as a student, and it is such an honor to be able to go back there and teach. I'll be teaching a week-long class on rigid heddle weaving. Now, I think of this class as extreme rigid heddle weaving. We start with the basics. So if you're someone who's never woven before, no worries, you will get everything you need to be successful. More experienced weavers will be encouraged to take rigid heddle weaving as far as it can go. We'll talk about color theory, play with mixed warps, weave with two heddles to create fine cloth and double width fabric. We'll do inlays, hand-manipulated laces, texture pattern work. I've taught several rigid heddle classes out here in the Pacific Northwest, and it's always a fun time. I'm looking forward to having a whole week to fully explore the capabilities of the simple but versatile rigid heddle loom. So if you'd like to come out and learn a bit about rigid heddle weaving, I'd love to see you there. I've got an update on the Afghans for Afghans rectangle shawl project. It is done! Yay! I came back from Convergence and hurriedly finished up my 3 shawls and got them in the mail before the deadline. You can see pictures of my shawls and those woven by other Weavecast listeners up on the Flickr group. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. This was my first charitable weaving project, and I learned a lot. First of all, organizing takes much more effort and time than you'd expect. Second, people are wonderfully forgiving when you make boneheaded mistakes, like forgetting to send them weft. Sorry, guys. I also learned that 20 over 2 wool is delicate, but well worth working with. I hadn't woven with wool that fine before, so it was a personal challenge as well as an opportunity to help others. I also discovered that weaving for others in need makes you really think about the recipient and empathize with them in a way that you don't just from reading about it in the news. As I was working on this project, I found myself drawn to books about the lives of Afghan women and finding out more about what life is actually like over there. It made the women who are going to receive my shawls real to me, not a face on the news, not a statistic on the radio. There is a real live woman surviving harsh conditions who is going to be wearing the work of my hands. I received an email from Ann Rubin on July 22nd about how the project is going. Here's an excerpt. As of today, we have about 320 rectangle shawls, of which 56 are woven. Amazing quality and the sweetest notes from the weavers. Thank you for participating and for your caring about the Afghan people and for taking action. I am darn proud of us. I know that many of the people who participated in this project were beginning weavers. Some had just barely gotten their looms. And so I'm really impressed at the effort and can-do attitude that everybody put into it. And I think we did some good here. Have you seen the summer action movie Wanted? My husband was a little bit confused when I started jumping up and down and insisting that I wanted to go see this movie. Shoot 'em up films, while I'll watch them occasionally, are not my usual pick for movie night. He knew I was an Angelina Jolie fan, but he couldn't quite understand why I was so excited about seeing Wanted. We went and saw the movie with our friends, Jenny and Jim, and as we were settling into the seats, I turned to Eric and I said, "Well, now do you know why I wanted to see this movie?" And he had no clue. The screen went black, and white letters scrolled across the screen. "For 1,000 years, the fraternity, a brotherhood of weavers, has been the cover of a group of assassins." And Jenny and Jim busted up laughing at that moment, and Eric turned to me and just gave me this disbelieving look like, oh no. So Wanted has Angelina Jolie as a weaver, huge power looms with luminous warps stretching to the ceiling, a loom of destiny in which skipped threads determine the course of people's lives, weavers kicking ass and changing the world. I mean, seriously, movie night just doesn't get much better than this. There was even this, "When you can grab the fly shuttle from the loom, grasshopper, you will have learned," moment. I had a blast. And now that said, the movie is not timeless cinema. There was much that was mockable and wanted, like an army of booby-trapped rats. But still, as a weaver, I just had so much fun watching this movie. Eric went to Comic-Con this past weekend and actually met the creator of the graphic novel that the movie is based on, and he got me a copy. Now, here's the thing. I'm reading the graphic novel, and there is absolutely no weaving. No loom of destiny, nada. So here's what I'm wondering. Who put the weaving in? The screenwriter? The director? If you want to learn more about Wanted, there is an entertaining review of it on thesimon.com. The feature is Guy Movies from a Girl's Point of View, and the lady who wrote the review is just hysterical. I'll have a link to that on the show notes. If there are any other movies out there that have weaving as a background element or a major theme, could you please leave a comment in the show notes? Because I'm intrigued by the idea of cinema with weaving in, and would love to rent some movies that had a weaving theme. Our sponsor this episode is Pocket Meadow Farm. They specialized in locally raised yarns from the Quad State area of West Virginia. They carry both classic and luxury fibers, things like wool, alpaca, mohair. Selection varies, so you can check their website at pocketmeadowfarm.net. If you're looking to purchase locally and you're in the West Virginia area, they're a great resource. Or if you are buying online and would like to support independent farmers. Now, without further ado, let's go to Tampa.
Tamara, and I'm from New Hampshire.
Wendy Hilton, and I'm from Maine.
As first-time attendees, what do you think of Convergence?
I'm awestruck at the immenseness and the size and the quality of everything that I've seen, and the people are just amazing.
I feel the same. It's been absolutely fantastic. And to see people in person that you kind of idolize, I feel like I'm the teenagers with the rock stars. And then the fashion show and what these people can produce, the ingenuity and the ability that they have. It's fantastic.
What advice would you give to folks who are thinking about coming to Convergence?
Rest up. bring comfortable shoes. Read all your programs, but then throw them away because you're just going to wing it the whole time you're here. You're going to get distracted. You're going to meet people. You're going to talk to people. You're going to follow them. You're going to go here. And you're going to spend way too much money in the vendor booth.
Just come and enjoy. If you've never been, you really don't know what you're missing. And there are some older people here with disabilities, and they are here. So I think it's really for all ages, all abilities. You can't help but learn. It's all about the learning experience. It really is. It's fantastic. And make sure you go to the fashion show and the exhibits.
What was the most tempting thing you saw in a dealer's room?
A new loom. We do a lot of online shopping. And it was just so great to be able to see it, to touch it. And if there was something that you wanted to try, this is the time to go ahead, try it. Just try it. Everybody is helpful. Everybody was more than willing to help you make the right selections for yourself. There was just too much temptation to say that one thing really blew me away more than anything else. I walked in and just stood there for like 3 or 4 minutes and just couldn't move. I couldn't figure out where to start or how to even approach it. You have ample time to keep going back and going back and going back, but it's just overwhelming.
There are so many vendors here who have thought outside the box, things that you won't see anywhere else. And like Tam said, it's seeing the things that you've seen in a magazine and being able to touch them and having people explain them. I've never tried soy silk. I'm going home with some. Laura Fry talks about it, but so Laura, I'm doing it. Tencel, and it's amazing. But there are so many little gadgets that fix something for you. I'm going home with some.
Before I let you go, just tell me how long you've been weaving and what's your favorite kind of thing to weave?
About 11 years, and actually, I'll do a lace, and that's my favorite. Then I'll do overshot, and that's my favorite. I really love all of them, except Bateman, I never want to do again.
I've been weaving for about 4 years. I keep being drawn to shadow weaves and laces. I make all my gifts. I don't shop for anything anymore.
I am impressed and somewhat intimidated.
No, I have a small family. I just think it's better to give something because I get to think about that person through the whole process. And I'm fortunate enough to have family and friends that appreciate that and what I give to them. Every year they get something new from me.
Thank you so much for stopping by and talking to us.
Thank you for Weave Zine and the podcast. I mean, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to meet you.
You're very welcome. One of the delightful things about Convergence is you never know what kind of artist you're going to stumble across. Right here out in the atrium in front of the registration table, there is a gentleman who's been entertaining us with, what's this?
It's a button accordion.
Playing Irish music?
Indeed. My name is Mike Duggar. I'm here with my wife, Sharon Lynn. She's a doctor at KU in Kansas City, Kansas. I got into Irish music when I was about 32 years old. I heard a band called the Danann. There was a player in that band called Jackie Daly. He played the button accordion. All I wanted to do was learn how to play Irish music. So I picked this up in 2000. I've toured with and still continue to tour with several groups. Locally in Kansas City with a group called Kelly. Then I'm still in a band called Glen Road with a great All-Ireland champion named Turlough Boylan.
Is there a place online where we can find out more about your music?
It's www.glenroadmusic.com.
Will you play something for us?
I will, yeah. I'll play you the old copper plate and then John Brennan's reel.
Lovely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so you're here because your wife is a weaver.
Yes, she's a weaver. She works on an 8-harness loom, and she does traditional weaving. She's always interested in the stuff done back in the medieval times, I guess. So she does a bit of that. And I do this.
Can you give me your name?
Marty Benson.
How long have you been weaving?
I learned to weave in college, as many of us did back in the 70s. And then I had this 20 years of life happen, and I started weaving again about 1998. So about 10 years.
What brought you to Convergence?
Because there's so few opportunities to have an in-depth immersion weaving experience. This is the place. This is why I came here.
Have you been shopping?
Oh, yeah. I did some major damage last night. I'm trying to be a little bit, you know, I'm a little bit on a diet today, and then I'll have my final blowout shop tomorrow.
What's your favorite thing to weave?
I weave on a draw loom. So my very favorite thing is to do designs that I take from nature.
Dee Dee Woodbury, Houston, Texas.
Tell me about the apron.
When June Hansen put Nordic Studio up for sale and my best friend, Tracy, bought it, these are our all-time favorite yarns since the beginning of our weaving, I said, well, we need aprons. And so she said, well, can you weave them? So I wove her colors in the 16-2 cotton and turned the yardage over to her. She had them sewn up. And they've been very popular.
Everyone wants one.
We had, you know, a length of yardage for towels as well, which we all divvied those up.
They are just adorable. They have red check on kind of a cream-colored background. There's the Nordic Studio up the top, the big star with the blue letters. And I think what really makes it are the little red buttons. Those just send me.
We get a lot of use out of them.
I'm Victoria Moore from Birmingham, Alabama, and I just have woven my first two towels. I cut them off the loom to come here. I'm a newbie.
Well, let's see them. Ooh, these are lovely. So can you describe them for our listeners?
I just started weaving, so I just learned to do my warp, and I put on a dark green and a chocolate brown as my weft. I used white cotton for my warp. It has 5 patterns in each one, and I used different tread lengths, and it was a 4-3-2-1, 2-2-12.
Beautiful.
And I'm going to use them in my new kitchen that I just redecorated.
one of the treats of Convergence is the opportunity to test drive looms built by manufacturers from all over the world. Most of the modern loom manufacturers were there this year, and I thought it would be fun if you and I went around the vendor hall together and tried them all out. Think of me as that weaving buddy who drags you over to the Jacquard loom and says, "Come on, let's try it."
Bob Kruger from AVL.
AVL has recently changed hands. You're a new owner, and I'm curious what your background is in weaving and why did you want to get involved in this business?
My wife and I purchased AVL in late 2004, and we had very little background in weaving. My wife is an anthropologist by education, and so she has some interest in historical textiles. And we have friends that are weavers, but we ourselves hadn't really been involved in weaving. The decision to purchase AVL was much more of a family and lifestyle decision. I come from a corporate background, from government and defense to prototyping with a lot of work with engineers, all the way to multinational chemical companies. I was looking for something that was not a big career ladder up the corporate chain, lots of travel. Our family consists of three young children, and my goal was to move from Los Angeles and move to someplace that was a little bit quieter and more conducive to raising families. And my wife happened to also be from the area where AVL's at in Chico.
Are you an engineer, or do you hire engineers to work for you?
We have an R&D team. I contribute, but I wouldn't say I'm the primary person involved in development. I tend to be the business and the driving end of the process.
I'm still curious, if you're looking to get out of corporate life and do something a little bit more family-oriented, why a hand-weaving business? I mean, that's such an unusual thing.
I was looking for a business in a niche market, something where I wasn't going to be overrun by competition from China. And manufacturing, which is really my love in terms of business, that is, in the U.S., particularly difficult unless you find a niche manufacturer, because once a company grows in the U.S. to a certain size, eventually it outsources all of its manufacturing activity.
Are AVL looms entirely produced in the U.S.?
Yes. We purchase some componentry from other parts of the world, but the vast majority of all componentry and the loom itself, of course, is assembled in the U.S., and of course, specifically at our plant in Chico.
Do you give plant tours?
Of course.
What about you? What's your story?
Pam Stoser from AVL. I've been in Chico since 1970. I knew the original owner, Peter Strauss, way back in the 70s. We were hippies together. Over the years, through a couple of job changes, I would always stay in touch with Peter whenever I was searching, and he would stay in touch with me when he was looking for someone. A couple years ago, it just was the right time for both of us. I came on with AVL. My background is marketing, design, and PR, and sales. So it kind of fit, and so that's kind of what I do for AVL.
What makes AVL looms distinctive?
Well, AVL's always been about innovation. From the very beginning, when Jim Ahrens was making looms, Jim was a mechanical engineer. Eventually, he ended up working in the weaving world, promoting production weaving in the United States in the 60s and 70s timeframe. During that time, Jim put his experience in seeing how the evolution of the power loom was transforming production weaving and started using some of those ideas, especially turn of the century power loom weaving, into hand weaving techniques like the adoption of the Crompton and Knowles dobby head and putting that onto a standard hand weaving platform. Our equipment is something that we better all the time. We don't stay static with any of our products. We always look for new and exciting ways to give the weaver more capability and more enjoyment.
What's your favorite feature on the new AVLs?
I'm really excited right now with our new Jack 3G Jacquard loom. We went back to the drawing board with this one. We took a little bit of old and a little bit of new and married them. We took some ideas from the original Jacquard designs, including the knives that were used. we mix them with a countermarsh concept, which I believe is the first of its kind. And of course, it's all electronic. The technology of our jacquard head is really what is exciting. It's going to offer weavers a more economical way to get into jacquard weaving than's ever been possible before.
We're looking across at it, and it seems to have about the footprint of a countermarch loom, you know, the Glamocra size looms. I've heard horror stories from weavers who've bought jacquard looms and had to, like, put in skylights to fit them in their house. This seems much more reasonable.
The frame is actually an A-series frame, so it's exactly the same footprint. The only difference being the height, which is approximately 7 feet. Compared to other types of jacquards, you typically see a 9 foot to 9.5 foot tall loom, which is, I think, what you're...
Yeah, the 8 foot ceiling.
Yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge in developing it? It seems incredibly complex.
The technology took a lot of R&D work, testing and trial and error. You have to take the time to do it right. You can't shortcut these things, and of course you can't just go out and pick up the technology from someplace out there, because it doesn't exist. It's taken us about a year and a half, almost 2 years now, to develop the technology. We're quite excited about it.
So Pam, if you were asked the question, what do you think makes AVL looms distinctive, what would your answer be?
A couple of things always come up when weavers talk about AVL looms. They talk about speed, efficiency, certain features that are available on AVL looms, like our dual warp tension system, our automatic cloth advance. Those are really important to weavers, and they come up every time I'm talking to a customer about buying a loom. They want to know what that loom is going to do for them. And if they're production weavers, those things are really important.
What's in the future for AVL? What are you currently thinking about?
We have a number of things we're working on at the moment. Looking at the CompuDavi technology and advancements we can make there, we have some exciting things that are very close. I don't want to divulge at the moment, but we're very close to something that I think will be exciting to a lot of weavers. And there are literally thousands of Davi weavers out there who would find interest in it. The other exciting thing for me and for the company is that we've been commissioned to build what will become the platform for our semi-automated and automated jacquard technology. It'll use the existing Jack 3G head style, but will incorporate a more sturdy frame built around the idea of automation, so it'll have a metal frame. And we're in the process of starting that now with the expectation of having that loom up and running in the fall. It'll be at a university, and we're really excited about that as well.
This is the sound of the new AVL Jack 3 jacquard in operation. This is the sound of an AVL workshop Davi. Here at Convergence with Barry Schacht, the founder of Schacht Looms. So welcome.
Well, thank you. It's great to have a chance to talk to you.
I always ask the hand weavers, how did you get into hand weaving? Because there's always a good story. How did you get into building looms?
In 1969, I had just arrived in Boulder, Colorado. I went to work for the university. I was on the grounds crew. I was making $1.65 an hour. And one day they gave me a lawnmower, and I mowed a peace symbol into the front lawn of the student union. And as a result of that, I was fired. Soon after, my brother had a girlfriend who wanted to learn how to spin and weave. And we went to Loveland, Colorado, and met Louise Green, who was just starting her business called Green Tree Ranch. And she was one of the forerunners of the resurgence of weaving. And she asked us to make some spindles for her, which we did, and a loom. Our question back to her was, what's a loom? We actually did produce a very crude loom based on Nels Namorowski's step-by-step weaving. When we had made the first model with one enhancement, we showed it to Louise and she said, that's wonderful. And it really wasn't very wonderful. It was as crude as could be, made with handmade tools. We were like little elves in the garage with handsaws. But we produced it, and then we improved it. We started to make it, and at the same time, the Back to the Earth movement was really getting going. So we kind of rode that for the first 2 years because we were, we would say, not into working. We had a different lifestyle in mind at the time. But eventually we realized that our income was coming from this. We got official. Our first looms were made on very old Christian communes in Loveland, Colorado, because we didn't have money for tools. They did that for several years, and along the way we bought a few tools and actually started making them ourselves. Very simple tapestry loom with two heddle bars that you would tie string heddles on, and then you would raise or lower alternately those two. We introduced tension to that little loom, and we still make the same loom today after 40 years.
I've got one of those. It's a really nice, sturdy tapestry loom.
We look at it as a loom for the beginner to learn hand manipulation techniques. And it's proved to be a staying loom. With all the other products we've done, this is still one of the strong little looms that we've been making, and just little enhancements, but we haven't changed it for about 20 years now.
The loom I'm most familiar with is your Baby Wolf. When did you come up with the concept for a folding portable loom?
I think that was probably in the year 1980. We knew that the small loom was going to become more important. We had worked with a lot of other looms in our retail store environment, which we had up until the early 70s, and felt that the X-frame folding loom was going to be really superior. We kept adding features way above what other folding looms were at the time. When we got to the point where it was just superior with all of these features, we thought we had to have a name to go with it. Everybody was naming things after people or sheep, and we thought, well, this is such an aggressive product that we had to call it something aggressive, something that related to sheep, which were the wolves. But we softened that name by calling it the Baby Wolf.
The other thing I've always wanted to ask you is your logo, the sheep. Where did that come from?
I think it was 1970. A friend of mine, Bert Gold, and I were touring Ireland. Just before we were getting ready to leave, we took a ride up in the mountains outside of Dublin. The sheep came up over the hill, and I yelled to Bert, stop. He stopped the car. I got out, leaned over the car, and took about 20 pictures of this herd of sheep. I never saw the picture until we got back. I had the film developed, and I instantly saw that that was a good company logo. The first few years, though, of our existence, we couldn't even afford to print it in color, so it was always in black and white, but it's basically been our symbol that relates to who we are and touches on the romance of the hand-weaving industry.
It's ironic that such a chance encounter would end up being the representation of your company.
Yeah, we love it. We've done many versions of it. We've even made them into chocolate bars.
What are you currently working on? Do you have any new products you're developing?
We have a lot of products in our minds, and some of them are actually in prototype stage. Jane Patrick, who's the sales manager, and my wife is the creative director and has probably a list of 100 products. These are things that we work on slowly. We have a design group at Schacht. We have our technical production manager, Philip Sokol. We have Cindy Lair, who's our production manager. She's in charge of running the entire shop. And Jane, we meet periodically whenever we have a new product, and we just go through all of the requirements first, and then we establish prototype, and then we start building models. And usually it can take 6 months to 8 months before we'll bring a new product out, even if it's a very simple product.
So if there are 100 ideas out there, how do you pick which ones to invest in developing?
In the old days, it used to be when I got inspired to finish something. Today, because of the market research we're doing with Jane, knowing more what weavers' needs are, she kind of pushes for those things, and we kind of put other things aside, and everything is being worked on, I think, in my mind. But when we bring it to the design team, it's really a product that's going to bear production within probably 2 to 3 months.
If you had to sum up your philosophy behind what you're trying to do with Schacht looms and spinning wheels and your products, what would that be?
Throughout the whole time that we've made looms, we've not only looked to make great products, really improve products, consistently add to them, but also to run a business that's a really meaningful workplace. there are a few things that we do which we've always done. We've always provided the benefits that everybody says they can't afford to provide. We've always done those things in the employee environment. 401k plans, health insurance, dental insurance, life insurance, a reasonably good employee lounge with 3 microwave ovens and a free coffee machine, cheap pop. Those are all important things. We currently have employee gardens where any employee who wants can have a plot of land, and we provide all the tools and all the water. They need to do the work and provide their seeds. We raise honey, and we're hoping next year to start actually raising chickens. I used to have a farm many years ago, and I'm trying to bring these things back, but also make it a cooperative effort on the products. And we just see a certain position in an industry which is full of ingenious, wonderful products, and that we are part of a long, long-standing tradition.
If somebody should end up in Boulder, Colorado, do you give tours of the factory?
Yeah, we love to give tours. In fact, after the Denver Convergence, we had a party for all the loom manufacturers and spinning wheel makers of the world, and we had over 100 people at the factory. We don't care who the person is, as long as they have an interest in this craft, we love to have them come tour and get a little bit of insight into how a product is actually made.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
My name is Jukka, and I come from Toika Loom, Finland. They are very heavy looms. As you can see, the structure is very sturdy. The timber, we use hardwood, which stays in light color. This system we have with the computer looms, it's unique, and it is so simple to use for weavers. That's the main advantage. There are no wires and extra parts. It's just the box you connect to the loom, and that's it.
You got rid of the treadles. Yes. What was the thinking behind that?
It's the same principle, to make the weaving as simple as possible. There's only one electric pedal, and when you press that, the shed opens automatically. There's electric motor doing the job. So you don't need any effort. You don't need to think what treadle.
How long has Toika been going?
110 years as a company. But we used to make weaving equipment even before that. It's a family business. I'm of the fourth generation. I have my son with me, and he's fifth generation.
Are you going to continue the business?
I don't know. Probably not. Not me.
Do you have more children?
Yeah, I have more sons. Yes.
Can you tell me more about the computer interface for the loom?
Yes, it both lifts the shafts and lets the others drop down. So the shed is outside, and because it lifts more the shafts that are in the back, the shed gets even. With these features, the shed is good even with 32 shafts. The most popular interface is still the 16 shaft box, but 24 shaft, that's getting more popular because there are much more possibilities with that one.
I have an 8-shaft loom, and I'm starting to design my own weave drafts, and I'm running into the problem of not having enough shafts.
Yeah, if you are figuring out, would it be a 16 or 24, it's maybe better to take the 24 from the beginning, because you cannot update it. You need to change the box if you want more shafts.
I saw something interesting in your product literature. You can actually upgrade a Glamacra loom?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, and in many cases, you can connect the interface to an existing loom. Of course, to a Toika loom, but also to some other countermarch looms, because there exists a lot of used looms on the market. This is very often the case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I am now over at a Toika loom that is being woven by Katie Reeder Meath. Tell me about your new loom that you're sitting here playing with.
It is phenomenal. The first reason I was drawn to the Toika loom is the way it feels. I'm very tactile. I like wood. It is a fiber after all. I purchased a Glimocra loom many years ago. I really enjoyed the shape of the loom, the design of the loom, the idea that you don't need a lot of metal. When I found out that Toika was making a loom that still looked like a loom, but it was computer controlled, my eyes opened and so did my heart. The price tag was a little intimidating, but I started thinking about it three convergences ago. I had just come off having had a broken leg. With your leg in a cast, no matter how good you feel, you can't treadle. You can't leave your leg dangling down. When I discovered this little pedal could be put up here, I could whack it with my hand while my leg was up on this prop. I could put it on the bench. In other words, a broken leg, even amputation, I would still be able to weave. And I cannot imagine life without weaving. The second thing that drew me to this loom is its quietness. When I weave, it's a meditative thing. When I'm weaving, I invariably have some sort of music on. And this being quiet, I could do that.
Can you weave a little bit for me so we can hear it?
Yeah.
Did you find it easy to switch over to the pedal instead of treadles?
It's intuitive, this loom. It has three different weaving modes. We have it set in normal, which means I step on the treadle and it opens the shed. I let my foot up and step on the pedal again and it opens the next shed. In the fast mode, one treadle closes and opens the next shed. So the only time your foot is not on the pedal is when the shuttle's flying through. Those options also impressed me 2 years back when I was starting to get really serious about making this investment. Mm-hmm. And it's an investment in my mental acuity as I age, because doctors keep saying that as you get older, you should give yourself new challenges, learn new things. So I thought, okay, I'll see if I can learn to handle this.
I think I'll use that same argument with my husband.
Hey, well, it's a good one. But you're not old enough for it to work yet, fine.
I'll remember. Does this thing connect with a serial cable or to the USB port?
This requires a serial port.
Yes, but you can place a USB adapter in between. And with the laptops, there are no serial ports.
It's become a real problem.
Yeah.
Are there any plans to create a USB interface?
Yes, we have thought about it, but as far as the adapter works, there's no hurry to do it.
The WeavePoint software?
That's the one which is included in the deliveries to the United States. It's included in the loom price.
Does it work on Vista?
Yes, of course, and also you can use fiber works to control them.
Thank you so much for your time. And Katie, thank you for giving me a tour of your new loom.
Oh, you're welcome. Would you like to try it?
I did. I tried that one yesterday.
Oh, okay.
I liked it very much. The treadle's a little different, but the action was very smooth.
Yeah.
And it was very quiet.
La Claire Looms, François Brassard, the owner of the La Claire Loom.
Can you tell me what's unique and special about the La Claire looms?
We have been introducing a lot of new products in the last 8 years. We have the Voyageur, which is a portable, foldable loom. And we have the WeaveBird, of course, here in the show that the people can weave on.
The WeaveBird is your computerized loom, yes?
Computerized loom, 16, 24, or 32 shaft. It's a contour mesh loom. And it is very easy to work with two treadles, very light on the treadles.
What's your name?
Etienne.
Could I get some audio of you weaving? Can you tell me a little bit about the background of Leclerc Looms?
That company has been in the business for more than 125 years. I took over the company in 1995. Since then, we changed most of the line and we introduced a lot of new products. which is more modern than the standard Nylus looms, which is in the market and are still work. All the looms of Leclerc are still working in US, Canada, and in the world.
When you took over, what was your vision for the company?
To have new models to change the line completely. The technology changed over the years, and we had to pick it up and have a new product to meet the request of the customer.
What requests were you getting?
The first request we had was to have a new model of table loom, which will have the levers in the front completely folding. That demand has been made by a few person in California, and we said that we will challenge that, we'll make the looms. Together with the customers, we developed what we call today the Voyageur. It is a completely folding loom. We have three different sizes. The 9.5 can be transported in flying the hand baggage, and the 15 3/4, and now we have the 24
inches weaving one.
It can be 4 chef, 8 chef, 12, and now 16 chef. For teachers, for students, for school, for summer camp, whatever it is a very neat loom.
It's cute. I'm looking at one from across the room, and I see you've got the levers.
Quarter-coated, so it is nice, and we can pick it up very rapidly, which one we have to move. And they are holding open with the magnets, so it's very easy to lift out.
I'm going to go see. show me this. Oh, yeah.
So magnets hold the levers in place, and we can disconnect it rapidly or gently.
That's really neat. So you don't have to worry about your levers flying up and changing your pattern.
Right.
And that one you could take on the plane and
this one, 9.5 inches, can be taken on the plane as a hand baggage. It's fold front and back like that, and it's going inside the bag. Very small. The 8 chef, 9.5 weights only 16 pounds.
Oh, so nice. It can ease move around.
Today, a lot of customers want to have multi-chef, and our looms, our traditional loom was really 4 chefs. So by increasing the number of chefs, we made sure that the shed was possible to make. So we went to back-end straddles in order to be able to make a shed evenly and have a very good shed. And of course, we work a lot with the WeaveBird technology. The WeaveBird technology has been introduced first by a teacher in Dublin in Ireland, and he sent me the information, and we developed the loom with his idea of having contour mesh loom in the market. It is very, really popular today.
That's very interesting. A lot of the multi-shafts are jack looms.
Yes, our loom is contour mesh, and also it is contour balanced, so the weight of the shaft frame is not on the treadle itself, so it is very gentle on the treadle.
Yeah, I tried it out. It had a real smooth action. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Joanne Hall. We are in Montana, and we're the distributors in the U.S. and Canada for Glamocra looms.
And Glamocra comes out of Sweden, right?
Yes.
You were telling me about this new little loom that's very cute and red.
The Julia. It is being introduced as an affordable loom for beginners or for people who don't have a lot of space. It's being introduced as a counterbalance loom because most beginners do better with nice tight tensions, especially on the lower shed where they have to put the shuttle. We've been testing this loom all winter, and last week I tested it with my two nieces. They did very well. No skipped threads and wove a whole towel in an hour, and they were very happy with it.
What strikes me about it is so darn cute. I mean, it looks like something that you'd buy at IKEA,
yes,
like kids' furniture.
That's part of the idea. If we don't have any young weavers, we all get a year older every year and 2 years older every time we go to Convergence. So we need to have a way to appeal to young people.
I'd also like to introduce
P.O. Dungel, D-U-N-G-E-L.
So you came over from Sweden representing Glamocra, am I right? So what's your position there?
I own half of the company.
Oh, great. Well, we were just talking about the Julia and how cute it is.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's an idea we came up with, my partner and I, while driving back home from the factory, where we discussed on how we could get younger people into weaving. And there were two prerequisites. One was that it shouldn't be too big, and it should also be cheap compared to other floor looms.
It's also got the overhung beater, which is really nice.
Which was a prerequisite from weavers.
Yes.
Joanne has been giving us a fantastic
It's so much easier to weave with a hanging beater.
it looks like it would also be a really good loom for apartment dwellers, because as houses are getting smaller.
That's what we hope to, and we're using the U.S. market first because the knowledge of weaving is so high here. But it also is very high in Japan, and they have smaller dwellings there. And we hope to be able to introduce weaving into Russia again.
What is Glamakra looking at for the future? Where do you see weaving going?
I don't know. We hope it's going up. And we also hope that this Julia and perhaps some of the other smaller mass market looms will be a tool to increase weaving. And having said all that, we will never ever leave our traditional models. Those are developed some 100 years ago and they seem to work well.
I had the pleasure of weaving on one of your looms at the John C. Campbell Folk School. And I was really impressed at how easy it was to configure and take things on and off. I'd heard horror stories about how hard a countermarch loom was to tie up, and I thought it was pretty straightforward.
We keep on hearing that story all the time, and Joanne and Becky and others are trying to show people how easy it really is.
Americans revived weaving 100 years ago. When that happened, none of the weavers at that time had mothers or grandmothers weaving. The loom builders and the weavers of that time had to go to museums and recreate this loom and weaving experience. But in Sweden, the weaving traditions were never broken. People always learned from their aunt, from grandma, from somebody. The efficient ways to weave, the comfortable ways to thread, were always passed down to the next generation. That information was not lost. And so the Swedish looms look very traditional, and there's a purpose because they work so well. And you need to have the height and the depth for good weaving. And you can add to most looms. You can add shafts, you can add treadles, you can even add draw looms as long as the loom is tall enough.
What other looms have you got?
The folding rigid head loom named Amelia. We have these on display, one with the single rigid heddle and the other with a double rigid heddle. We have been working on this loom for almost a year now. We've been testing it this winter and making some changes to it. Very soon we will have it in production.
I'm also very curious about that loom over there.
That is the updated band loom. Glamokra has been making this band loom for a long, long time. And it's a traditional loom of Sweden for centuries. Weavers have always made bands for apron ties, stocking ties, headdresses, for decorative folk costume. It's very easy to weave on the band loom. Because it has a warp beam and a cloth beam, you can put very long warps on it. And because it has the ratchet wheel and the pawl, it's very easy to advance the warp. So the weaving goes very quickly. You're sitting on a chair and beading like this, and your feet are opening the sheds for you, just like on a normal floor loom.
Best of my knowledge, we are the only ones making a band loom.
When I interview hand weavers, I always ask them how they got into hand weaving, because that's kind of an unusual profession. But it seems to me that building looms is even more unusual. So how did you get into that?
I'm a lawyer. And this partner, Bengt, and I, we have a few other companies together as well. And one day he walked into my office and said, take a look at this. And it was a prospect, and it was about Glimokra. And of course, I'd heard about Glimokra. It's a very well-known brand name in Sweden. And But into weaving, so I thought my friend had got a spin. But the company was so well run, and the people, Tog and Marianne, that had it before, wanted to retire, which I think was a tough decision for Marianne particularly, because she was the sixth generation of this family company that was started in 1926.
Oh, wow.
So the company is 72 years old today. It started as a reed making factory. But already in the 30s, they went into making shuttles and other weaving tools. I think it took until 1960s before they started making looms as well. We have the full range for the weaver. What we may lack is spinning wheel. We don't do that. But any other tool you need for weaving, we're proud to say we manufacture it. There's one thing we don't and that we sell is the ball winder. Everything else that you see here is actually made at our factory, even those bobbin winders over there and so on. So we have a metalworking factory as well, in the middle of nowhere, in the west of Sweden, on the border to Norway.
And they've been known as making the best reeds in the world for decades. And the town has been known for making reeds for centuries.
It's an old tradition already in the 1700s, where it's a very meager area. The soil didn't give much. So it was a way for people to get some more money. So during the winter times, people would pack their bags with the tools, and then they would start wandering around all of Sweden, Norway, Finland, Denmark, making reeds, being away from their family for about half a year, and then they came back doing the harvest.
What kind of wood do you use?
We use wood from the Swedish forests, birch and pine mainly, and now as much as we can. FCS, Forest Council Stewardship, where forest owners have committed to this program that they should have a certain percentage of their land to preserve for certain species and so on. It's not particularly much more expensive. And since our raw material is so expensive anyway, because all we use is the absolutely best, it's called XP wood. We never buy wood from a line south of Stockholm because the forests grow slower up north. You can see here on the how dense it is between the year lines. Each of these lines represent 1 year. You see the darker part is the winter, the lighter and somewhat thicker part is the summertime. But if you take a piece like this from the UK or south of Europe or down here, you'd have less than half of that, but you wouldn't have the same density then.
Right.
I think in this country pine is regarded as a softwood.
Yeah, it is.
And in the UK, I know this is marketed as Scandinavian hardwood. Selection of wood is very important. Bengt, my partner, is probably one of the leading experts in the world of how to select, dry and cut wood. He's been working as a consultant for IKEA for 15 years, traveling the world, telling the sawmills how to dry. And incidentally, I've been working for IKEA for 8 years as well.
Are you still a lawyer?
Yes, or I have my own law firm.
You do law as well as run this?
Yes, the division is Bengt takes care of production and I take care of marketing.
Can I test drive one?
Oh, yes, you can.
Have a try.
We have it set up with two shafts here. It's counterbalance. It's very, very simple. There's a little screw here that holds the cord stable. And then these pins just make it very easy to attach the cord. You just set this up so the thread goes straight from the front to the back. And then it's just a simple tie-up. There's a cord from the bottom of the shaft to the lamb, and then one cord for each treadle. So we have just two shafts and two treadles for the beginner to get started. And this is a pattern from the Best of Weavers Thick and Thin book. Erica DeRuiter designed this. So you get pattern on just two shafts. So that's what I put on this. But here I just have one shuttle, the thicker yarn, and people have just been weaving. So it's very simple. So you can stop and try that.
All right. It's very quiet too.
Oh yes.
Which
that's
seems like
what people say when they try it is it's so quiet because this makes no noise. This little thing here makes a little noise when you beat it, but that's about it.
Okay, well, let me get audio of this because that's one of the things.
Yeah.
Just the sound of the loom weaving.
See, that'd be perfect for apartment dwellers.
Oh,
because
yes.
You have to worry about the neighbors.
And we've had people contact us who have said, I'm moving into a retirement apartment and I had to sell my loom. How big is the Julia? I want to know if I can fit it into this corner in my room.
So how big is the Julia?
The weaving width is a little over 26 inches and the frame and the ratchet do not take a lot extra. So it's 29 inches across and the depth is very good for a small loom. You have about 32 inches of weaving depth.
It's not very tall either.
It's less than shoulder height. I think it's 53 inches.
Comes with two shafts, but you can add four and maybe even six?
You can add shafts as you need them. You could make it a four shaft loom. If you want to weave satin, you just add one more fifth shaft to make the satin. And we have experience weaving with six shafts on the loom. It's nice to know that the loom can progress with you.
One of the things I've heard about counterbalance is you have to weave balanced weaves. Is that true?
It's not necessarily true. I've considered making a tie-up kit for the uneven weaving, and I have experimented with the normal counterbalance tie-ups. But because it's a small loom, it won't give you as good a shed as you get on the larger floor loom. You need to have at least, say, 40 inches of depth on a counterbalance loom to get a nice 3-1 shed. The only difference is with this loom is the shed is smaller. So I'm going to develop a tie-up kit with elastics that'll make that easier to do.
How did you get involved with Glamakra?
I've always been involved in textiles. I have a master's degree from the University of Minnesota in textile design. My first position was teaching at the University of Montana. When I first started weaving, there was no one selling Lumocre looms in the U.S., and I always wanted one. But when they first came and were sold, they were expensive, and most people in Montana could not afford an expensive loom. But eventually, I started importing them directly from Sweden about 15 years ago. And I've never gone back to any other type of loom, partly because of the size and the hanging beater. They're just so comfortable to weave on.
Can you explain why the hanging beater is such a good thing?
I had some teaching looms in my studio that had lower beaters, and over the years with lots of weaving, I found my shoulders couldn't take the lower beater, so I had to sell all those and replace them with all hanging beaters, and I've not had a problem with my shoulder ever since.
Also at Convergence was Fireside Fiber Arts. I got to meet Larry Lesniak and his wife in person, which was a lot of fun. I also met their sons. If you are the kind of weaver who appreciates a tool that is as beautiful as it is functional, you might want to give a look at the Fireside looms because they are just stunning. I interviewed them for episode 25, Historical Weaving. So if you want to learn more about Fireside Fiber Arts and what goes into their looms, you can give that a listen. I'll have a link to that on the show notes. Louette did not come to Convergence this time, which is a shame because I was really looking forward to trying out their spring loom. I've heard good things about it from a couple of weavers, but perhaps I'll catch up with them at another event. The other interview I wanted to get was Ashford Looms, but it just never quite connected. So you'll just have to imagine someone speaking with a wonderful Kiwi accent describing some very cute and innovative small looms. And like Louette, hopefully I'll be able to catch up with them in a future episode. One of the things that struck me after I talked to all of the loom manufacturers is just how many of the companies have recently changed hands. Nearly everywhere, there was a new generation getting into the loom building business. It makes me hopeful for handweaving's future. That's all for this episode. Next month, we'll continue our traveling adventure with a trip to Complex Weaver Seminars, which followed right after Convergence. And now, it's time to get warped, because everyone knows you have to be warped to weave. Weavecast is brought to you through the generosity of our donating listeners. If you've not yet become a member of Weavecast, please consider clicking the donation button to help support the kind of weaving programming you enjoy. Our sponsor this episode is Pocket Meadow Farm, specializing in classic and luxury fibers produced in and around West Virginia. You can view them on the web at www.pocketmeadowfarm.net. Our musical guest this episode, Terry England with Tones of the Tropics on the PodSafe Music Network.